Thank them you're ready?
They think they can have it done within 30 days.
Testing, testing.
And that's from probably.
Testing, one, two, three. Testing, testing.
I kind of want to go ahead and get this rezoning over.
Yeah.
The deferral was asked for by the applicant is told so that this clock stops.
Right, okay.
And they're asking.
We've deferred this once.
Right.
But they're asking for deferral for the same reason we deferred it, so.
Yeah, and, you know, this is one of those things where it's nobody's fault, you know, it's not they changed their mind or the staff dropped the ball or anything like that. It's that we're looking for input.
Right.
Input from a perfectly appropriate state agency.
Right.
And I think we need that information.
Absolutely, no question.
I think that was the information we asked for.
It is.
We deferred it, right?
Exactly.
It's the same, the issue is just.
Right.
VDOT just got to.
Able to.
The next item is public comment section for our work session. Anyone wishing to come forward, please come forward, state your name and address. You'll be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll end the public comment section and go to our work session for tonight. Riparian buffer discussion, Holly Steele Planner.
Mr. Chairman, just a little background. We've had some comments on our ordinance from some developers in our community, particular ones who do more designs across roads, and they had some input on our riparian buffer section of the ordinance, and we just thought we would start a discussion on how we potentially might be able to improve that. I'll let Ms. Steele.
All right, you can go ahead and go. Okay, so just to let you all know what we already have in our ordinance, per the Fluvanna County zoning ordinance, we define riparian protection area as a vegetated zone adjacent to an intermittent or perennial stream where development is restricted or controlled to minimize the effects of development on local water quality. Indigenous vegetation, including existing ground cover, is preserved to the maximum extent possible. As Jason just said, our purpose of discussing this is because with the growth, and especially in Zion Crossroads, this is going to be coming up more frequently.
There's a lot of streams and whatnot, and particularly in the design, which is CPA, and this is going to be a recurring issue.
Right.
How do we determine an intermittent stream? I mean, perennial streams are pretty easy. How do we, look at the topo map and decide if there's a blue line there? Does somebody go out? How do we determine that?
There is a definition of it. Roger Black could probably answer your question out of the
Yeah, I'm assuming we normally just defer to Roger.
Let me give you a little anecdote from ancient history. When I was in Alamo County, there was a dispute over whether there was no doubt that an intermittent stream was on the property. The question was where. And the adjacent property owner was maintaining it was in such and such a location, and the applicant disagreed with that, said it was somewhere else. So they asked the county engineer who was there, and it was before your time, Mr. Lagomarsino. Wonderful guy, one of my favorites ever. And they both looked at him and said, "Where is the intermittent stream?" And he didn't say anything. He just thought for a minute and walked over and went, "Right there." And that's about what it amounts to.
Yes.
It's where there's a stream in wet weather and not in dry weather.
Well, I know what the definition of intermittent stream is. I'm just saying, how are we determining if something's there? And somebody from a fine institution like Virginia Tech with a water degree.
Here we go.
Well, you, actually, one way you can do it is if you look on a USGS map, they'll show the intermittent stream.
You didn't go to W.
What's that?
You didn't go to W.
I know, so we can't
stop.
But
they're not necessarily totally accurate.
They're not, but yeah, that's a good
guide. That's a good start.
Okay, I was just curious.
And I believe it is defined in the ENS state section of state code, and we would generally follow that.
Okay.
Ready for mention?
We're ready. Okay. So y'all can kind of peruse this. This is not the specific areas that we're trying to necessarily change, but this is just some background on what we already have. Our current requirements along intermittent, perennial, and major rivers like the Hardware, Ravana, and the James. So y'all can look over that, and if anybody has any questions about that aspect. So I think as of right now, we're not looking to change what's on this part of the ordinance. So the section in question is what I've highlighted in red. There is some leeway in there for the subdivision agent to allow for some modifications of this. But as you'll see, I've pulled Powhatan's requirements, and they have specified exactly how much leeway they can have. So what we're looking to do, if you all agree, is to make this more specific so it gives more guidelines of exactly how much modification can be made. To the riparian buffer.
We did speak with Powhatan's planning director, who also happens to have had a major part in drafting our ordinance,
right.
Andrew Pompey, mm-hmm. over almost seven years ago now.
Yeah.
And talked about how it would be enforced there versus what we would have here. And
right. So if you go to the next slide, that's exactly what Powhatan has in their ordinance. So the spot highlighted in red is what they have, that we would want to do something similar to that. At least y'all can change it to where it's just the Zion Crossroads CPA. You can make it for the whole county. But we would want to define that more clearly and put a percentage of some kind in there of how much the subdivision agent can reduce the width of the buffer.
What is the planning department's thoughts about whether we should consider it for just Zion Crossroads area or all areas?
I think it's going to be the most recurring issue in Zion Crossroads, but I can see issues in other parts of our other growth areas where we want development. Where it would be beneficial for the planning department to have the same kind of leeway, specifically the guidelines.
From a water quality protection standpoint, making it countywide might not be the best idea.
Well, my question was going to be if we do look at this, mm-hmm. Nine Crossroads, say this 50% or whatever that percentage mm-hmm. is going to be, but in other areas specify no more than X, Y, and Z.
So are you saying having different percentages for different areas?
Yes.
And I mean, that could be an option too, if that's something y'all would want to do.
And not that, I don't know that we necessarily are trying to address it all right now.
Right,
For future reference, if we're going to be talking about water quality and mm-hmm. how that's going to impact each area and what that water is going to look like for those particular areas, I would like to take under consideration what that impact is going to be, because Zion's Crossroads may can take up to 50% where somebody else may only do 14%. And so looking at it from those area perspectives mm-hmm. at a later project.
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, I did a grant application in regards to the Quakin crude after the big fire in Lynchburg. And when I was looking at the James River watershed, it was like 65% of the Commonwealth gets its water from the James River watershed. So yeah, that might be an area we want to have more cumulative mm-hmm. protection.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It seems like this makes sense to make this provision when you're developing smaller pieces of property in more intense uses,
right.
where that 100 feet or that 50 feet or that 75 feet actually means a significant loss of developmental opportunities.
Right.
Whereas if you're in the Columbia District or, you know, you're out in the country and you're developing 150 acres, that 100
Absolutely.
Feet or 75 feet or whatever buffer is something you can work around if you try to.
Right.
So I think, and where we want that intense development is mostly Zion's Crossroads, certainly
right.
for now. So limiting to there and seeing how it works out seems like a reasonable first step, and if you find out it has application elsewhere, you can always change that.
We could always go back and.
Or if you find out it's a disaster in Zion's Crossroads.
Exactly, that's also the option.
So make it countywide, that opens up a lot of potential failure without really knowing what the impact's going to be.
And we definitely support countywide.
Am I wrong in saying this has good application where you have a small tract with denser development as opposed to, if you've got 150 acres to develop, this is just cost of doing business. You figure out how to work around those 75 feet.
Right.
And looking at some of the most developable property up at the crossroads, it seems this would affect, this issue's going to come up as we go along through that corridor.
It is. Plenty of streams.
And it seems like they'll be putting pressure on us to, you know, kind of make some concessions at some points, but we would like to have specificity to give the developers rather than leaving it vague.
So do you all feel like 50% is a reasonable amount to reduce it by?
You've got two competing considerations as far as I can see. One is that if you leave it the way we have it, you're trusting your staff to use, to exercise its discretion based on the criteria in the ordinance. So if, for example, somebody came in and said, I've got a small parcel and I don't want to set back from this, let's assume it's a live stream, I don't want to set back any, a larger distance from the live stream because it uses up too much of my land, but I'm willing to put in an intensive water treatment facility, underground tanks or whatever it might be. And people do that in more urban areas. That might be appropriate in that case. On the other hand, it leaves discretion in the staff, and you have to trust the staff that they're going to exercise that discretion appropriately. The problem with doing it this way is it looks like this. And I think it would become essentially automatic. So if you're in a situation like you just described, Mr. Zimmer, a small parcel, that the developer is going to assume that he's going to get it routinely. And on the other hand, he's got the larger parcel, and he may have an equally good case, but there's no discretion to allow that in that case. So it's easier for the staff to say the 50-foot setback and you've got these criteria here, so we're going to allow you to do a 25. So
with appropriate remediation.
Right. But what I'm saying is that doing it this way makes it easier for the staff because you've got hard numbers. The other way is more flexible and potentially more creative. Excuse me, it's more challenging for the staff.
It doesn't give
the certainty to the developer.
You're also dealing with consistency issues with their staff changes, how they interpret it, and all that.
I mean, I could envision instances where you have a parcel that didn't need any setback. It had to be some, but nothing substantial. If they had really intensive treatment facilities and things like that, this wouldn't allow that.
Because it only allows you to forgive 50%.
Right. And it's a subdivision requirement, not a zoning requirement. So you can't go to the BZA or anything like that.
And your experience before, what have you seen localities in this situation?
The only one I know a lot about is Albemarle, and Albemarle's extremely rigid.
We definitely are in favor of modeling after Albemarle's.
You said you are or not?
No, we're not. Okay. You're going to hear that a lot.
They've got a cast of thousands to enforce it, too. So we don't really have the staff to enforce it.
I think one of the questions for the staff is, similar to what you just asked, Murphy, that is, what's the problem? You know, if we're trying to address a problem, let's identify the problem first. And we don't want to adopt a regulation that has potentially far-reaching consequences, and then have it, it's just not important. So I don't know what the staff's experience, my guess is the staff doesn't have a whole lot of experience in Fluvanna County.
It's not really came up except for one instance with the developer last summer, and we told them to look into it.
We have the good fortune of not having a lot of intense development.
But
on the other hand, it doesn't give us a lot of track record.
But we can certainly see, particularly talking with Roger Black, how it can, we're going to get these same questions over and over to Crossroads, so we thought it was a good time to take a look at what we have and see how we're going to apply it, since it's not really been applied too much since the ordinance was adopted.
What do we have?
Do you go back one slide?
We have...
back one more.
It's one too many.
One more.
There you go.
As it stands now, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of ability for the staff to make concessions. I don't see that in there. Maybe I'm...
Right, so do you think one slide forward? No, I'm sorry. The other way.
Forward. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, this is our...
This is ours still, yes.
This
is what I would call a general standard for review. It doesn't say 50 feet or 2 acres or whatever, but it gives you, a performance-based standard.
Right, and there's a long list below of things to consider. I kind of summarized that below, but it does go more in depth in the ordinance of the things that have to be considered for that modification.
And you want to be a little more specific so that there's not so much variance.
Okay, that's okay.
So this wording here in red that you're asking for.
So we already have what's in red.
That is
in the ordinance. We already have what is in red. That is in our ordinance currently.
Okay.
Which is similar to what Powhatan has, but Powhatan specifies that what those numbers you saw in the last one can be reduced by up to 50%. We don't have that limit. So that's what we were wanting to potentially add in, was putting a limit on how much of a modification can be made.
Okay.
Because right now the subdivision agent could just say, put your house in the river if you want. Like, this would say...
If you all approve it.
Exactly.
So do we have the expertise to determine that the mitigating structures or whatever that they're going to install so that they can build right up to the creek or within 10 feet of the creek or whatever are adequate?
Roger and I have the ENS stuff. I don't know if that's necessarily adequate, but...
We have knowledge, but whether we can...
So my thought is the other thing that the 50, we can forgive basically or make exception for up to 50% of this, that gives you kind of a hard stop. Okay, if the rule is 100 feet, I can let you develop 50 foot of that. Mm-hmm. We're always going to have this 50 foot backstop in this, so only so much damage can occur.
That's true, but remember that the staff is going to be making the same determination.
Right.
It's just it has a hard number stop.
But if they
so can
make
the
a mistake, mm-hmm. they can allow development kind of right up to the creek. And I'm not saying they're going to purposely make a mistake, but you can't.
No,
50%.
It's possible.
Yeah. They can only make so big a mistake if it's a 50% buffer built in the program.
Well, I know people that say 50 feet isn't enough.
Oh, I understand. Yeah.
So whether it is.
Some people think we should have 300-foot no-cut zones around all creeks.
Yep.
Science doesn't support that.
So are we suggesting a hard line, 50 or up to?
Up to 50.
So it could just be 25% or whatever the subdivision agent determines.
I guess
up to 50.
I guess the reason why I'm asking, because we're between a rock and a hard place, you know, me, I trust y'all as a staff because I don't have the expertise that you do, but you know what your limitations are. At the same time, I wouldn't want to hurt a developer's ability to do what they want to do, but I don't want to hurt our environment
right.
at the same time. So, and then coupled, like Mr. Zimmerman was saying about a mistake could be made. I mean, that could happen in any type of situation. So it just seems to me the up to with discretion, because I think you all realize how impactful it is to your job and the county. If you make a mistake, you're not trying to. And that, you know, through appeals and through follow-up and looking at the final whatever, you know, adjustments can be made to that. I just don't want to cut our nose to spite our face type situation.
Right.
And we've only had one situation in this developer was asking, so not to know whether we're not there yet and put you all through all of this work keeps being tossed up. So do you all, from your position, do you want to go this route because it makes it easier on your job, or because it just makes it a plain statement for the developers that's coming and we know that Zion Crossroads is going to continually be developed?
I'm
neutral, except in the fact that I know developers do like consistency, and I do know that different people, some administrators and subdivision agents can interpret regulations differently, and positions turn over. That's when the developer community around here is pretty tight knit. If we start having consistency issues, it could be a problem.
I think this is a good idea because, like I say, you have one developer that you gave a 75% closure, and then the other one you only gave 25% closure. You're just going to give them an idea of how far you can go.
Well, that's true, but don't forget the basic issue, and that is the threshold determination that you're going to reduce it, it has to be handled the same way. The only issue is whether you can go up to 50 or more than 50. And my guess is that the more than 50 would be pretty rare. Because that's...
Well, I personally would favor looking at the terrain of the property. You know, having it laying there in front of you, and it's... It may be that you're talking about an uphill situation or a drainage from the slope down into the stream and so forth. I like the bit of having the flexibility, because in one situation, 100 feet might be too much. I mean, you really wouldn't need it. I guess you could say if it's 100, it's 100. But I would favor looking at the terrain of the property.
Right, and that
would be most responsible to the environment.
Absolutely, and that's one of the things that is listed in order to make the modification. Like topography of the land is something that has to be considered in that. So exactly,
I can see a builder coming in and you said, "Well, you got to have 100 feet," and he said, "Well, I don't need 100 feet. That's just being that's wasted our land and so forth." And as land become more valuable, it can be an unnecessary expense.
Well, what do you think for the fact that it's 100 feet and they could allow it up to 50 feet? Is that reasonable?
I would say so, but I would have faith in my planners and so forth. These developers put a lot of money into this property.
Well, to answer partial to your question, let's take Mr. Johnson's example where the development located on property that slopes away from the river, except for a very short distance. And, you know, it's essentially a bluff that slopes away from the river. It's not going to have any effect on the river, what happens on the on this property, as long as it's sloping away. So the ridge line is going to depend on, it's going to determine that largely. So if you've got a, if you got the ridge line, let's say 20 feet from the river, then you're going to have 30 feet, if you reduce it to 50, then you got 30 feet below the ridge line that really doesn't make any difference. And so, I mean, that's an illustration. And I'm not going to say it's going to happen very often. It isn't going to happen very often, but it very well could in this county. It's an illustration of where additional flexibility is desirable. One thing that concerns me is whether this could be confiscatory in a given this riparian buffer thing could be confiscatory in a given case.
What do you mean?
Well, let's say you have Mr. Zimmer's small parcel, and it's the best building site, let's say, is less than 100 feet from the stream. Less under our rules, less than 75 feet from the stream. I always think in terms of these regulations as, tell me what the problem is, and once we see what the problem is, then we'll formulate the solution to the problem. And if the problem is to prevent pollution and sedimentation and erosion and stuff like that, you'd look at it from that standpoint. And if the developer can show that problem is solved, my example with the backward slope being an example where it wouldn't make any sense to say we're protecting the stream down here when the surface water runoff goes the other way.
I can see situations, small enough track laid out in such a way that a 50-foot or 75-foot buffer coupled with setbacks makes you can't build. Because, you know, I can see that. Setbacks can be dealt with at the BZA or something like that.
That's right.
But that's still a process.
I mean, that's the purpose of the whole variance process.
Right.
Make sure you don't have that confiscatory effect.
Right.
Because it's a subdivision regulation, the variance process doesn't exist. This is the substitute for the variance process.
Or it is. They can still get variances on the setback.
Yeah, but they can't get it for the riparian buffer.
Right.
So with this example, with the slope going back to the river this way, you're building that house over here. Suppose you built it right at the top of that knoll, and your roof ridge like this, the spatter from rain or something could actually go back into that area.
An example of that would be you make sure your roof drains drain the other way.
So
that's not uncommon.
Okay, I understand that, but not all water that hits the top of your roof goes into your drain. It gets better off into to whatever.
That's perfectly true, but of course that's always going to be true.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some water that's going to go. You can set back 100. excuse
200
me,
200 feet,
and you're still going to get the problem. So, as you can tell, I'm inclined to prefer the element of flexibility. Because it doesn't present these issues that concern me the most.
So you're more in favor of the orders we already have instead of changing it to the 50%?
That impresses me as exactly what it is, and that is it's an arbitrary number. And it may be the right number in most cases. It may be the right number in almost all cases, but it may be the wrong number in some cases. It may be too much. It may be too little. Now,
but it could
it
be
makes it a lot easier for the staff, because the staff can say, sorry, fella, I can't give you more than 50%.
But it could be that detrimental to that 1% or whatever it is, that people that could actually build on a site there, that's the only place that they could build, and then we're going to say, well, nope.
That's right, and that's what I mean by it having a confiscatory effect. That concerns me.
I mean, it sounds like Mr. Stewart is neutral on this. Mr. Payne cautions, let's keep flexibility. Sounded like we've only had actual one inquiry. So it sounds like the preponderance of the evidence is we're solving a problem we don't have yet.
The inquiry we have is probably someone who's going to be developing a lot of property. And
okay, so that might
be inquiry.
Multiple inventory inquiries, okay.
And this current staff wasn't around when this ordinance was developed. The zoning ordinance was amended in 2012. And so we weren't familiar with those discussions and how this ordinance came to be, but we thought it might be time for us to take a look at it. I know some of you all were here when it was drafted.
Are we in a position to say something like this? You can pull from it to get what I'm saying. You're laughing because you probably know what I'm
ready. Go.
If we were to change it, and I don't know, let's say we said 25 to 50, but anything over 25 would require the approval of, or the request to the zoning board, because you're only going to run into that, in my mind, ever so often, according to what you're saying, but you're going to have the same person, and that whatever decision that you all made, that we say that is final. I mean,
you can't do the Board of Zoning Appeals, because this is not a zoning regulation, it's a subdivision regulation.
Okay.
The way our ordinance is set up, the director of planning is the subdivision agent. And of course, you all have input into it too. But the concern for consistency is a legitimate one. That's why I say this is a balancing act. I think Mr. Zimmer's got a good point, and that is, have we sufficiently identified the problem that we know what answer we want to impose?
Are we looking for a solution to a problem we don't have yet?
Right. Or maybe we do have a problem, but we don't know the scope of it.
Right.
But how many, I guess the question for me with you asking that is it going to be 3 requests? Is it going to be 10? Is it going to be 15? At what point are we going to revisit it? When will we consider that to be a problem issue? Is that something that's going to be determined by you all, the staff, that, hey, this is an issue, we want to revisit this again, or are we putting a number there because of?
Does anybody have any idea why this other county went to this?
No, and because that ordinance was already there, I think, when Andrew Pompey got there, but I will say, and I don't know if this.
But the reference to the village growth area is as well. They felt appropriate to limit it to the counterpart to what we have as the CPAs.
And keep in mind, Powhatan and Bluvanna are similar, but are also different in a lot of ways. But Andrew Pompey did say that this has only come up maybe one time in the whole time he's been there. So it's not going to be something where every week we're going to be like, they're asking for another one.
A lot more development.
Okay.
We do, and it's only come up one time.
One time, he said, and the whole time he's been there, it's only come up one time. Because when I was asking him about this, we were interested how effective it's been there or not effective, or what experience they were having, and he was like,
they're based on a similar.
It's only come up one time. So there's that tidbit, too.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like something to me at the table, and if we see, okay, every development in Zion's Crossroads is requesting something from you, but Jim, you have to do a lot of legwork, because, you know, the current system puts more on y'all to make a determination, because they're always going to ask, I want to build all, you know, I want to get rid of the entire 100 foot or 82 feet of the 100 feet, and you have to determine if that's appropriate.
That's the tension you get in a regulation like this.
Right, but if he has to do that every week, we probably need something like this. If he's doing that once every 3 years.
That may well be.
Sorry, we just have to suck that up.
But the countervailing consideration of that is, if you put a number in there, a lot of developers are going to see, oh, I can get 50% off.
Yes, I understand.
And that's really not what that's intended to do, but I'll promise you, that's the way it's going to be perceived.
We're fine with leaving it alone for now. We just wanted to bring it to y'all's attention because we know things are going to start picking up.
Should actually give y'all more flexibility.
Okay. I'd like to wait in and then you all tell us.
Until we have the problem.
Yeah.
We'll keep the sleeping door.
Because you're right at that. That 50, if we do the 50%, that's going to be.
It'll be a recurring scheme.
We're going to work to that quota. Everybody's going to say, this is what I can get, so I'm going to get it.
Right.
Whether they really need it or not, because why wouldn't they try to get it? Whereas if it's a little bit nebulous like it is now, and they have to work a lot harder to prove the number they came up with and the mitigations they came up with are legitimate, they'll think twice before they do it. And if they do it, it'll be.
Could a developer, like on an intermittent stream, could they come in there and put in piping to take care of that when you have rain or something like that where it doesn't actually run on top of the ground? Would that be legal?
It's conceivable.
Yeah.
That would be a DEQ issue. It'd be more than just a county that would have
to. No, it's not. It wouldn't be a DEQ. It would be.
It's in our ordinances that's something we can consider.
But yes, that could happen. And that's one thing I guarantee you will happen. Because if you're talking about putting in a 200 square foot hot dog stand, that's one thing. If you're talking about building a shopping center, I guarantee you're going to be building on top of streams.
Sure.
And you either move the stream or you channelize it.
Well, the thing, if you put in piping, first thing you've got limbs and leaves and rocks, who's going to clean the pipe?
Well, you wouldn't do it that way. What you'd do is put in 200 feet of pipe.
Like weirs?
No, you just put the pipe across the whole parking lot.
Oh,
and,
I got you.
And the pipe's going to be big enough that I won't say you could never clog up, but it wouldn't be routine.
Okay. It's not a 12-inch culvert pipe, but you
have.
It's 12-foot culvert pipe.
Well, it's not unusual in big developments to have pipes that are 6 feet in diameter.
I like the fact that you all are thinking ahead because you can see the development that's happening at Zions Crossroads and bring it to our attention so that we've already discussed this that way when it comes up in the future. We've already, gotten some feedback from you all. Could make a more informed decision as to the need for our county.
Speaking of that, they're breaking ground for the water system tomorrow.
I know.
On the
Zions
Crossroads. Okay.
It didn't take long to put up all those orange flags.
They got the road decided. I mean, some of it's right up against the pavement. In the pictures I saw in the news last night.
That's good because that means we don't have to acquire easements.
There you go.
Then I laughed seeing those orange flags. I'm coming down another road today. Far away from there, I see all these orange flags. So we talked about basically looking at this if it becomes a problem and leaving it as it is.
Sounds good to me.
All righty.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Thank you all.
Did anything else that we need to discuss tonight?
Just for our future work session next month, we're probably going to come back with some stuff on soil borrow areas. Right now, the ordinance addresses those accessory use, but we're looking to maybe modify that and allow it as a standalone permitted use with a conditional use or special use permit. And Mr. Robinson probably will bring back some things on the Columbia Rental Inspection District. So that'll be next month. And that's another one of those developer issues about how we're going to address, you know, large piles of soil moving around and all that.
Right, so yeah.
We're trying to think ahead of that too.
Is there any other discussion we had need to have at a work session? Or if not, we'll end the work session at this time and reopen our regular meeting at 7 o'clock. Anybody have any objection to that? Okay, we adjourn from the work session. I've been seeing it on the county.
On the county website?
Yeah.
It is actually. I saw the one on Saturday morning.
We got one more. Thursday,
I'm still the one that tells the second one, Brett.
I noticed that there was a bunch of those problems.
Really?
One of the big cold. I saw it.
Okay.
Thank you. Probably bring it up on the call.
I'm going to check that out because it's clean. Yeah. I thought you've already been. Would you like another one just to share with anybody?
No.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Which that's on the grips and 30 pages. I spent a lot of those actually not even typos of like it's typical, typical
That'd be great.
That with the word
you've got another paper kind of
like but they put leaves like you're talking
about.
So, you know, but I also want to be trying to embarrass anybody. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You know, it's just vague, but I don't want to be out of
work. They apparently have to determine how many lots they build.
That's correct.
And then they have to have a
Okay, or I will consent to use separately.
It's squeezy.
I guess. Just like the graphic.
It's always good.
But it's substantive, it probably is.
There's practitioners in the rural areas.
They said we weren't.
My sister's a professor.
So we want to make that corrected, you know.
My brother was.
That's not it.
My brother was.
Come turn. He's the vice chair.
Literally, every time I see something crazy, he's going to be getting
corrections. Is that part of the
national person? I don't know. He says he gets even good with the judges.
And it's why you do it. My special interest. Yes.
So when you review your attendance, do you have to take that into account?
Yeah.
You have to just probably.
25 years. 100%
all. You know, 10 over every time. Get on Friday.
I guess that's a parcel, yes. Yes.
He borrows services too. He's in the He did one of his high school friends the worst units on landscaping. Pretty long here, 4 years.
You left with six contracts, six different contracts, six employees, every contract's 35 days. Only it's easy. And he was on our, oh, has to have it, you're, did you get the hire?
Made the final.
Yep, they just want one, they're hiring a battalion chief.
Then it was council got in and rescinded those tax cuts.
Yeah.
We just know it's second.
Now, 7 o'clock, we will be opening our regular session of the Blue Valley County Planning Commission, March 12th, 2019. We're going to change a little bit of order of our business night. We are going to do Pledge of Allegiance and vote silent. After that, we're going to actually go to DMP 1801 and SUP 1805, have a little bit of discussion about that. So the first order of business to be the Pledge of Allegiance followed by a vote silent.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The next items that we're calling ahead of time is ZMP 1801 and SUP 1805. The developer has asked for a deferral for the same reason we have asked for a deferral last month, because the traffic study is still not complete. So we will have a discussion to the Planning Commission to whether or not defer this to next month, due to the fact that the traffic study is still incomplete. Do I have a motion about SUP 1805 and ZMP 1801?
I mean, I would do that we defer them until we can get the information we requested. And I guess, in this case, I guess we would defer them to our next meeting.
I think that would be prudent.
What do you call that, a date certain?
Yes.
So I would move that we defer these to our next meeting with the expectation we would have that traffic study by then.
I have a motion to defer this at the request of the developer of these two items by Mr. Zimmer. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second for Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. This is deferred to our next meeting. Okay, the next item of business is our director's report.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any comments at this time. There are no board actions to report.
Okay, thank you. The next item is our first of two public comment sections. Anything other than the items that are on the agenda you can come forward and speak about tonight, you will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end our first public comment section and go to the minutes of the January 8th, 2019 and the minutes of the February the 12th, 2019. And the minutes of the January 8, 2019 have been corrected to show the fact that Mr. Johnson nominated me for chairman, Mr. Zimmer second, and then nomination of Mr. Zimmer for vice chairman was by Mr. Lagostino, was the second by Ms. Mary Keith. We have listened to all your tapes, and that's what was determined. Do I have any motions about the minutes?
I move that we accept the January minutes as presented.
Okay. Have a motion by Mr. Zimmer to accept the January minutes as written. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second from Mr. Lagostino. Do I have a motion about the February the 12th minutes?
You should really vote on that motion while it's on the floor.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Okay, do we have a motion about the minutes of the February the 12th, 2019 meeting?
Make a motion to be accepted.
Okay, have a motion by Mr. Johnson to accept the minutes from February the 12th, 2019. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second from Ms. Mary Key. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Okay, the next item will be SUP 1901, Jamie Adams, National Communications Towers. Ms. Holly Steele will be bringing that forward.
Okay, so this is our first of two special use permits for the night. It has been applied for by National Communication Towers. So this request is for a special use permit to construct a 199-foot self-support tower with an enclosed 80 by 90-foot fence. This is on 12.7 acres of tax map 39, section A, parcel 29. This is in our rural preservation planning area, and they do have an intent to serve letter from AT&T for this tower. Some of you all may remember that a previous SUP 1207 was approved by the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors for a 199-foot monopole tower and the support facilities to be located on the same parcel. So a little bit of background about the previous SUP. It was for a 199-foot monopole tower. It was approved with 15 conditions. The Planning Commission approved it on October 24th, and the Board of Supervisors approved it on November 20th, both in 2012. However, the special use permit did expire on May 20th of 2014. So currently, the applicants are proposing a commercial use tower. It will be able to provide wireless phone coverage, data transmission, and high-speed internet to the surrounding areas. It would remain unlit, and it's a 198-foot tower with a 1-foot lightning rod. However, it is different than the SUP 1207 in that this is a lattice tower as opposed to a monopole tower. Okay, and you'll see some pictures later on for clarification on that. And this will be able to work in conjunction with the existing towers located at the VFW and the county landfill. Okay, so that's the location. On West River Road, across from Fluviana Baptist Church, if you all are familiar with that. Okay, and you can see the primarily everything around it is zoned A1. There is one very closely adjacent property that is zoned I2, which is an industrial. Okay, and these are some site photos. I'll show you guys. It's kind of hard to see, but this was during the balloon test. So there's the balloon, that little tiny thing up there, so you can see that. Okay, you can go to the next one. Okay, so this is sitting directly across it in the Fluviana Baptist parking lot. You can see it, and this is across the street in Rosewood Manor, the rural cluster across the street, and there it is right there. Okay. Oh, and this is just the sun out front. Okay. All right, so this is the site layout that the applicants are proposing. Okay, can you hear that? and then the compound cliff view. And y'all can see on the right side, that's what a lattice style tower looks like as opposed to the monopole. Okay, good. All right, so to conclude, this use was approved in 2012 by the Planning Commission and Board of Supervisors. The main difference is just the style of the tower, but the location and the use will remain the same. This would be a great service in order to provide internet and cellular service for that area of the county. The only potential adverse impacts you might see are visual impact. I mean, you will be able to see it. And then the potential of tower structural failure. Okay. And we do have the applicants here, Jamie Abbott Adams and Stephen Gallagher, and they have prepared a presentation. If you all would like to see it, we have that on a thumb drive if you guys would like that.
Y'all want to see the presentation?
And you guys can come up. Or one of you, both of you. He's putting them right now. He's coming.
Is there a control, right? You see some of the slides contain some animations. Or I can just tell you when to click the button each time, whatever you prefer. While he's loading that up, I'm Stephen Gallagher with National Communication Towers. Thank you all for having us this evening.
Thank you.
It's good to be back. It's been a few years, and glad we're able to circle back. I'm Stephen Gallagher, also President Jamie Adams. Mrs. Steele already hit on most of the salient points. I'll just illustrate a few things here for you to give you a little bit better idea of what the lattice-style tower looks like, and then entertain some questions on that. And really quickly about us, we've been around since 1997. We're a small company situated out of Richmond, Virginia. There's about 5 employees. And we've zoned now in 21 different counties and have built about 60 towers over the years. We've got number 61, which will be going up in Louisa County. Jamie will break ground on that in a few months. As evidenced by the last time this tower was zoned under 1207, we don't build towers until we have an executed lease agreement with the carrier. The last tower site we zoned with heavy support from Intellos, which, as you all now know, no longer exists as a carrier. Shortly after that tower was zoned, they sold their spectrum rights in this county to another entity. So, being that they did not execute a lease agreement, it wasn't prudent for us to spend the money to develop the site with no one to actually use it. Hence, now we do have someone that very much wants us to deliver that site very rapidly, and we are now before you again to request another special use permit for this site. As was stated, the tower height is a total of 199 feet, same as last time. It's a 198-foot tower with a 1-foot lightning rod. It does not require any FAA lighting. And it's located about 8/10 of a mile east of the intersection of Rockfish Run Road. The tower compound itself is what's located at the base of a tower. You see the fence, the shelters, or the H-frames, the rack systems that the carriers put at the base of the tower. Actually, it's going to be quite well obstructed from view, even though, as it appears from the photographs, it's actually situated in an open field. And that's due to the topography in that field. It actually rises to a crest in the center of the field and then drops off to the backside. So there's actually, the base of the tower will actually be fairly well screened from view as you drive down through that travel corridor. Hit the button again. Should fly in 2 photos there, one of a lattice style tower and one of a typical type equipment shelter that's located within the fenced compound at the base of the tower site. Next slide. It's set back almost 700 feet from the Route 6 right-of-way. As we discussed, it'll be partially screened from the travel corridors, that is the compound portion at the base of the tower site. And it's our standard setup for a tower site. We have an 80 by 90 fenced compound within a 125 by 125 lease area. It's a gravel road. If it's fully co-located upon, meaning you have six carriers using that tower site, you might experience 6 to 8 light vehicle trips a month using that driveway. So less traffic on that driveway than comes out of your driveway in a week. You can see here the utility easement, the ingress egress utility easement relative to the approximate property line and relatively how the lease area is situated in the back part of that parcel. And again, here's the same survey that Ms. Steele already reviewed with you. That's Route 6 there. Next is going to show you how the easement comes in off of Route 6 and then the lease area in the back of the parcel. The two handoff sites that it serves is the NCT VFW tower site. That tower site was actually zoned before the rezoning expiration, which ended up benefiting the county. The county now leases the upper portion of that tower site for some E911 equipment. This site is situated a handoff to that site. If you hit the button there, that'll flash for you so you can see which way that is. And if you hit the button again, it also will hand off appropriately to the county's landfill site to the east. Next slide. The tower visibility study, we actually just updated the one that we had done originally. When Jamie did the balloon flight, he basically verified that it was the same visibility. So in trying to keep it consistent, the visuals there, you can see directly sort of southeast of the tower site there is an aerial of the subdivision that's under development. It has a few more houses than what's shown in that photo just because the satellite imagery hadn't caught up yet with the actual on-site development. But anywhere that it's solid red, there was some visibility of the tower site within those locations. And then as we advance the slides, you can see there just above the tree line, this is west of the tower site. So you're looking back east from almost 3,400 feet away. As you're traveling east on Route 6, you can just, that's kind of the first point where you can see the tower peak above the tree as you're traveling east back towards the tower site. If we go to the next slide. This is actually in front of the parcel, the open field on the parcel of the landowner where we were building the tower. That was sort of the first really good full view you got of the tower was as you started to get in front of the open portion of the field. And of course, we've simulated a lattice tower to scale in those photos, and you can go to the next one. This is what it looks like from the front steps of the church. During the original zoning, the church was actually very supportive of it because there's no service in that area, obviously. So here, basically we verified that the balloon flight still looked the same height as it was originally flown, and then simulated a lattice tower there. If you notice the little yellow VW bug there, the base of that road is actually pretty close to where the base of the tower site is. So you can see how much of a rise there is in the field between the base of the road and the base of the tower. That's why we were making the statement that some of the compound at the base of the tower would be screened from view, and that gives you a little bit better visual representation of how that might work. Similarly, if you were on the back side of the field, you wouldn't be able to see a car drive along Route 6 because of the rise in the middle of the field there. This is, again, just right up against the edge of the road there. As you're traveling a little bit further east, as you're going along the roadway, that'll actually obscure part of the tower itself, and of course the compound will not be visible still at that point of travel. And this is back in the neighborhood there, so you're southeast of the tower looking back to the northwest. Had to pull back from it a little ways to actually get a picture so we could give you a fair simulation of what it looks like above the tree line, sort of on one of the cul-de-sacs in that neighborhood, to give you a fair view of what you will see there. As Ms. Steele stated, we do have a letter of intent from AT&T. That lease has been sent to AT&T, is in legal review right now as we speak. And they touch base with us at least once a week to find out how quickly we're navigating this through zoning. So they seem to be very intent on co-locating on this tower as soon as we can deliver the structure for them. Next letter. Of course, all of the, in compliance with zoning, all the carriers have our information. We do market it to local internet, wireless internet service providers as well to help bring as many customers to the county as possible. And we do give them a very favorable lease rate. Most of the times they are smaller, locally owned companies, so we try to work with them to help entice them into the community to provide more connectivity options for the folks that live within the service range of the tower sites. And just kind of in summary, the tower is not going to be lit. The compound actually will not be visible from travel corridors because of the topography. And the sites are designed, you know, not just for the deployment of major wireless carriers, but also for local internet service providers. And we're seeing that as a big issue that a lot of counties are having to solve. How do they provide connectivity to folks that either want to telecommute, work from home, or as we're seeing more and more in schools, the children have to have high-speed connectivity of one form or another to be able to keep up with their course curriculum. It's positioned properly to hand off to the east and the west, and it's designed to accommodate a minimum of 6 carriers. And you can actually end on that slide right there, the summary slide. I have that up there just in case folks ask questions. We've got a couple of preloaded slides after that. As Ms. Steele stated several times, we are requesting a lattice-style tower in this case as opposed to the originally zoned monopole. There's several reasons for that. The main reason is structural capacity. What we're seeing more and more from both the major carriers, from the county uses as well, and from wireless internet service providers is they want to co-locate dishes on the tower, whether they have fiber connectivity or not, to that tower site. More and more carriers want to have a microwave dish on that site so that they can communicate with other tower site assets. That has significant structural implications on a tower structure. And when you're building something like a monopole, which is essentially a super, super expensive flagpole, and you put a microwave dish on it, that pole is actually designed to sway and move, which is fine for regular antennas, but is very, very bad for microwaves. And the reason for that is the microwave shoots a pinpoint beam at a line of sight to another target. And if it's moving around, that connectivity goes away, and then you can't use that tower site. So you need the rigidity of a lattice-style tower. It is achievable in a monopole in certain situations, but the expense to provide a monopole tower of the same height in some cases, if you have a lot of dishes on it, can be almost, you know, 60% to almost double that of a lattice-style tower of the same height, and then you can still have other structural issues. The other issue that Ms. Steele highlighted was the possible tower collapse. We actually over-design our towers. We work with Sabre Towers, who's one of the largest manufacturers in the world of towers. They're by far not the cheapest tower manufacturer, and we actually, whether it's required or not by a locality, we have them design our towers with break wind technology. So in the event of a tower failure, instead of that tower failing, however it may fail naturally, it's actually designed in this particular case to collapse within a 62.5-foot radius of the center point of the tower. So not only does it collapse within the lot lines, it collapses within our lease area. Also, when towers fail, they don't fall over like a tree that's being cut at the base of the tree and just fall straight over. When they fail, they usually fold over on themselves at some point and oftentimes don't even separate from the main tower structure. We've never had to deal with that, hopefully never will, and you know, we spend extra money to over-design our tower so that that's hopefully never a cost implication, and we have had towers sustain near-direct hits from tornadoes in the last few years and have come away unscathed. So with that being said, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. When you talked about the beam pointing to different places and losing connectivity.
Yes, ma'am.
Is that an issue that would impact
talking about losing connectivity because people can't get the internet.
It's, you know, it's not an impact to people. It's just an impact to the wireless infrastructure network. So it's literally like a laser beam. And actually, when they align the microwave dishes to hit another dish, you have a transmitting dish and a receiving dish. When they align them to transmit data, they actually will use like a basically a glorified laser pointer and aim it until that laser pointer starts to hit on certain targets. And they have other, you know, digital alignment tools as well, but that's one of the rough ways that they start to get that distance sighted in, and they can actually sight them in for quite an impressive distance, provided that the tower sway is within the tolerance of the beam width that that dish can transmit from one target to another.
So my other question is, when you talk about tower fail,
yes, ma'am,
because I have no knowledge of this process, are you talking about losing internet connectivity or the tower actually coming down? Because that's part of what I heard you say.
Right. Yes, when we're speaking of tower failure, we're speaking of it in structural terms, meaning the tower itself actually collapses. And then ours, we spend extra money with the engineering firm to design it to fail in a very controlled and specific manner.
And you said you've never had that happen?
No, ma'am.
At your 60 sites?
No, ma'am. And actually, I spoke to a gentleman that does a lot of tower work on the contracting side, and he said he can only think of really one tower in the state of Virginia that's failed as long as he's been in business. Where it's actually collapsed due to an event or something, and he said there's only one that he could really think of. So.
That's wind.
And that
is the primary danger to these.
Yeah, wind can be the primary danger if you're not policing your towers and running structural analysis on them every time somebody changes their equipment, which we do anytime our towers are touched. Whether it's got, you know, a ton of capacity left on it structurally or not, they're required through our engineer to pay for an updated structural analysis prior to being allowed to touch or change any equipment on the tower site. Sometimes what happens, and we don't build guide towers, those are ones that have the wires that come off of them for a long distance. If they're not maintained properly and examined, the guy wires can start to fail, corrode, rust, or they get overstressed and people don't realize that you can have some of the guy wires start to pop or give way, and then it's unequally anchored, and that can cause some issues as well. But we do not own nor do we build guide towers. All of ours are self-supporting.
I think back when y'all first, back in 2012, came for this tower to start with, at the time I did an extensive study on the different types of towers, and this lattice tower and the way it folds down if something happens was one of the safest structures I studied about. The fact is, the monopole, it is a solid structure, so you're hitting any wind it hits, it's going to actually hit it solid, where it can, wind can go through the lattice towers to a certain extent.
That's correct.
And so forth. So there was some discussion about sight, what you see, and so forth. But if we notice that almost every one of the pictures you showed, the visibility was mostly saw was light poles and light wires. So, and the fact is, nowadays with the communications, it's become almost important as water for the citizens in our county and other surrounding areas.
That's all my questions.
Anybody else have any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we'll open up discussion of the Planning Commission. Oh, that's right. I failed to do part of it. At this time, we'll open up the public comment section. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak about this project, please come forward, state your name and address, and you will be given 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll end the public hearing at this time and have discussion among the Planning Commission. Is anybody have any other questions, any concerns, or any of that? Like I said, I was here when this site was originally proposed, and like the gentleman said, people from the church were very much in favor of it at that time, and so forth like that. There was a little bit of discussion because this was a scenic byway, but my statement a while ago, when you ride down this road, it's no more different seeing this tower than it is seeing 100 light poles and these wires running everywhere, in my opinion, anyway.
I think you hit it on the head for me. You know, the necessity of everybody having access to check this technology.
I would just, for example, I was just this past week, a person I know who had her grandchild with her, and I said, so you got company? Yes, he says, she has a school project, and they don't have internet service of any type where they live. They have none available at all. So she came to my house to be able to do her school project for school, and that was here in Alpine County. So, it seems like there's not much comment. Do I have a motion?
I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of SUP 1901, a request for special use permit to construct a 199-foot self-support tower with an enclosed 80-foot by 90-foot fence with respect to 12.7 acres of tax map 39, Section A, Parcel 29. If approved, subject to the 15 conditions listed in the staff report.
Okay, I have a motion by Ms. Mary Key. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second by Mr. Zimmer. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Thank you. Okay, the next item for tonight is SUP 1902, Amy and Stephen Beyer Medical Clinic. Mrs. Steele, be here to let us know about it.
Yes. So this special use permit is a request to convert an existing building on their property into a low-volume medical clinic. This is on 3.81 acres of Tax Map 29, Section A, Parcel 89. This property is in our rural residential community planning area. The applicant wishes to use the existing 36 by 44 building. They are asking to add a handicap ramp, parking spaces, and a sign near their driveway entrance. Some of you may remember that SUP 1305 was approved on this parcel in 2013 in order to use the same accessory building as a floral shop. So the previous SUP was a request to operate a commercial greenhouse and florist in this same building. It was approved 5-0 by the Planning Commission and 5-0 by the Board of Supervisors in 2013, subject to 8 conditions. Okay, so this is the location right off of Route 53 across from Stagecoach Hills. And this is the zoning, so you can see there's a bit of a mix between A1 and R1, which is agriculture and then residential. So the line didn't show up for some reason, but this is their proposed sketch. You'll see the parking area over here, and then where it says the 36 by 44, that is the building. That area in between those is the building. And then if you go to the next slide, it'll show what you're looking at. So there's the home and the clinic site. Okay, so you can see, I put the red arrow because this building is pretty conspicuous back there. It's hidden by the home, and then just the natural slope of the property hides it a bit as well. Okay, and this picture was taken from Stagecoach Hills, the road right there. So you can't really see it too much from there. Okay, so to conclude, this is a request to establish a low-volume medical clinic. This was already approved for use as a florist and would definitely provide a much-needed service to the surrounding community. As y'all can see from the pictures, the building is largely hidden by the existing home and the natural slope, and it does appear to meet all of our county code requirements. We have added two additional conditions that were not in SUP 1305, and that would just eliminate the florist as a use. So if the next person who bought this property wanted to have a florist shop, they would need to come back to the Planning Commission and apply for that. And then also, they must receive final building inspection within 2 years from the date that the board approves this project, if it is approved. Okay. The main potentially adverse impact of this would be an increased traffic flow to the property right there on 53. So we do have Amy and Stephen Beyer here, the applicant. I don't know if both of y'all or one of you want to come up to answer any questions you all may have. Hi, thank you for having us.
Does anybody have any questions for the applicant here? It's going to be basically a low-volume medical clinic.
Exactly. So my husband and I were long-term residents of the county. We grew up here. I'm a nurse practitioner, so I currently work in Charlottesville. But the idea is to work and serve the community that we live in. So I'm starting off, I just want to start small and just work from home and see some patients. I'll be doing sick visits for children and adults. A little bit of primary care, sports physicals for the schools, and then DOT physicals for truck drivers.
Just a curiosity question. Are you folks new owners of the property? Or
we bought it last year.
So you weren't the florist?
No, we were not the florist.
What hours of operation are you thinking about roughly?
So I'm hoping Monday through Friday, and then as business grows, if business grows, possibly some Saturday hours.
Personally, I think it's wonderful. We've got people from the county opening a business in the county, like you said, need for the community. People.
John, I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson, the condition suggested numbers, suggested condition number 6 in the staff report addresses the hours of operation.
Oh, it did, okay.
8 to 6 Monday through Saturday.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Any other questions for the applicant? Thank you.
Not necessarily, but it was on the slide about the traffic. So we're already talking about things that's going to be happening, you know, in the area. What are y'all's concerns about traffic? Because, you know, of course, when you look at that and you're seeing people just stop.
Right. So there's already pretty much traffic going down 53 there. There's a lot of cars turning into Stagecoach, so there's already traffic slowing in front of that property. There's also, you know, the Orchard and then Calvary Chapel there as well. So I don't think we would add any traffic, but there would be some cars turning into our driveway throughout the day.
And there was some traffic there, but it was a nursery and something like that. So
I can just see the potential. Because what you're talking about, everybody doesn't want flowers.
Right.
But when you talk about young people being in sports and mm-hmm. truck drivers and all of that, there's a different kind of increase of traffic being right there and just thinking about the safety and mind of everybody that's going to be going there, because I think it's going to be a little bit different. You know, turning into the church on Sundays as opposed to every day.
Right. Okay. And when VDOT came out and looked at the project, their recommendation just to meet code, their code, was to widen the driveway a little bit for turning radius. So we'll be doing that as well.
They didn't have any comments on the line of sight.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty straight stretch there, as I remember.
It's been good line of sight right there. Okay, any more questions for the applicant? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll open the public hearing at this time. Anyone wishing to come forward and speak about this project, please come forward, state your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll end the public hearing part at this time and open it to discussion by the Planning Commission. I actually think it's a good thing. The more closer medical services are in the county and so forth, a lot of times people have to go long distances and so forth like that. And as far as I'm concerned, this would be something real problems because of, like I said, the line of sight and where this is. And it, basically, that building is hidden by the residents there to most extent.
And then the traffic issue, it is, 53 is a busy road. This is a, if there's any increase in traffic, it's an extremely low percentage increase. I mean, 53 is one of five major roads in the county, so.
And it will probably, a lot of it, the traffic will be from people in that area.
Right, yeah, that, I don't think the traffic is a significant change for that area. And it's hard to argue with somebody who wants to bring medical care closer to the community. And, you know, I have a special needs child. We spend a lot of time driving to Charlottesville. I don't think they'll be able to help us with that, with what she's doing. But it's great if they can help somebody, you know, be able to keep things closer to home when they have some of the less severe items that she would be assuming we deal with there. So it sounds like a great idea.
And I believe that nurse practitioner roles have expanded the ability of what you all can actually do as opposed to having a doctor. There's the autonomy of the decisions you can make on your own as of July of this past year. So that may be less costly on families between the traveling, the coming and seeing, you being right there, so.
Anybody else have any more comments? There's no more comments, no more discussion from the Planning Commission. Do I have a motion?
I'll give you a motion.
Okay, have a motion by Mr. Johnson.
I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of SUP 1902, a request to convert an existing building on the property into a low-volume medical clinic with respect to 3.81 acres of tax map 29, section 8, parcel 89, subject to the 10 conditions listed in the staff report.
Okay, I have a motion from Mr. Johnson. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second from Mr. Lagosino. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. There's no presentation, site development, subdivisions, or unfinished business or new business, but we have our second of two public comment sections for the night. Anyone wishing to come forward and speak on any item of the county, especially things that we would be concerned with, please come forward, state your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end our second public comment section. And if there's no objection from the Planning Department, Mr. Payne, or the Planning Commission, we will adjourn at 7:41. Okay, we are adjourned.